This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. Notably, we are not the people behind the Elite Everything YouTube. Don't go there. We are working on sending them a cease and desist right now. So just want everybody to know that. This is AB, of course. Joined, as always, by my good friend, Nate. What's up, Nate, a.k.a.
Hello, motherfuckers! It's me. The famous tweet from Maki Ito. She said, hello, motherfuckers. Just saw that Cody retweeted it, quote tweeted it, said, I want her to win. He is, of course, one of the savviest workers in the world. Gonna buddy right up to her, seeing that she has all the initial buzz here. What's up? I'm doing good. Mike, how do you feel about Maki Ito, a woman with such a foul mouth? We know you don't like curses, and now Cody and the official AEW account are boosting her saying the big F word.
Hey, y'all, it's your old pal. I am someone that, in general, it's more of my cursing is the thing I'm trying to curtail. Other people's cursing, they can go right ahead as long as they're not saying slurs.
Fuck yeah.
Curse to your heart's extent. I'm just trying to become a TV-14 person in a TVMA world.
I guess that's a valiant and laudable exercise or attempt.
I'm going to fail on this effort. Like, there's no way that this is some... It's something that I've noticed each time I've done a DGUSA show, especially as I get into the back half, that I just get so infuriated by what Gabe's doing that I start cussing. And then I immediately go like, trying not to cuss on air. So,
yeah, really,
there we go.
Really the story of this podcast, getting infuriated with what Gabe's doing might cause the people on this show to cuss. But tonight we have a show that was actually so good that we can cuss about it. It was really damn good. How about that?
It was hecking good, you might say.
Gross. That makes me feel icky.
Well, that's what I like to do here. If you want to see more curses, you can follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car, Nate's at Epitasis, Mike's at Fuji Heya. You can subscribe to the podcast, please, on the app of your choice. Just type in Everything Elite, not Elite Everything. It'll come right up. If you're using the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and a review. Please tell your friends about the show. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. So we're going to, what's the word I want to use here? We're not going to
podcast.
Yeah.
Talk.
We're going to forego our normal opening. That's what I wanted. We're not going to do Elite or Delete, but I still wanted to say it like that. We're just going to get into the big bad news stories of the day, and I think there is no better place to start than the very end of AEW's show on Wednesday night with Kenta, Lil K himself, showing up to attack Jon Moxley. Then afterwards, they announced that they're going to do Kenta and Mox. I'm sorry, he attacked. Okay,
Jon,
yeah,
Moxley.
I fucked that up.
Yep.
Mox,
Jack John Moxley. Okay. They're going to do Kenta and Omega versus Lance Archer and John Mox.
That's right. Thank you. That's why you do podcasts with your friends. They can back you up when you fuck up. So yeah, that's what they're going to do. All that's happening. Let us discuss our thoughts on the opening of the Forbidden Door.
Yeah. So I tweeted from our account, all caps. It's been an all caps couple of days here. Wrestling is back. And that was mostly because this was the kind of anything can happen feeling that you only get from wrestling every so often. And, you know, has been harder to attain in the time since, you know, the pandemic and going back even further since, you know, WWE largely just trots out the same guys over and over again, and it's all kind of, you know, become meaningless. They do their big Legends Night, and it's like, okay, yeah, here's all the legends that you see on a yearly basis. Who cares anymore? This was like an actual shift in the pro wrestling landscape that a New Japan superstar appeared on AEW Dynamite, attacked a guy, hit him with a pretty soft-looking go-to-sleep. John Moxley took one of the worst bumps in his life, I think, but didn't really matter because crowd was freaking out, viewers were freaking out, wrestlers were freaking out. Just the kind of thing you don't get from a lot of other mediums where it's like, oh, we have a genuine shoot relationship between these two companies that has been frosty, and you're going to watch the actual defrosting of that on television as part of this simulated combat story. It's just fucking exciting shit.
It's something that now that it's happened, I'm breaking my rule about not caring and not talking about it just because I felt like that fan booking and that just gets kind of rote and tiresome. But it's a very interesting way to start this relationship. We should have had a better sense of this, the fact that John Moxley was on the Wrestle Kingdom, I forget which night, but doing a video package from the LA Dojo. That should have been the indication that things were up. And now we know that he will be on Strong defending the IWGP US champion, referred to as such for the first time in probably 9 months, I feel like. I feel like it's been a long time since they've actually acknowledged him as the IWGP US champion. And it's interesting, especially when we talk about our Charlie Kelly message board thing, where we try to kind of figure out
all the conspiracy chart with string and yes.
This episode, Nate's doing the humans work,
I'm doing Mike Spears translation services.
Yes, thank you. But now we have like this interesting consideration now that for the first time, arguably since the downfall of WCW, and this is probably going to be something that I think that it's unpopular. All Elite Wrestling's the dominant partner in a relationship with New Japan. New Japan will have more exposure from Kenta popping up on AEW Dynamite than they ever will on their Roku station, than they ever did with Access. And it'll be interesting to see where this relationship kind of forms and changes, because the New Japan Access, you probably have at least one promotion that's probably not super happy that they're working with AEW, if not two. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be something to see how they kind of massage this relationship, because I'm of the opinion that other than like cool matchups and like copyrights and things like this, AEW really is the dominant partner. I mean, they should be trying to find a way of, like, using it for talent exchanges, getting people experience and seeing where this path goes. I mean, just the fact that Kenta showed up was exciting. And if that's it, and they co-promote this New Japan Strong episode based off of that, that's cool. But it'll be interesting to see where the path goes from here and how that affects the rest of the wrestling landscape.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing is what all AEW gets out of this. I mean, they're going to get a bump for next week, I would assume. Although I don't know, hell, how many times have we said on the show, anybody who cares about this already watches AEW, so maybe they're not going to get a bump at all. But it adds, we talked about this with Impact. Who really gives a shit about Impact? But it gives the idea that, like, things are happening. This is the hot place to be. And adding Kenta onto that just makes that even more so. You know, it makes it, it's true. It's not just Impact. And here's the Good Brothers, which has been a cool add to the show. But it's like, not only is there the possibility of some sort of relationship with New Japan, here it is. Now, that is also going to make things much more annoying. The discourse is going to get much, much worse around, like, what else could happen between AEW and New Japan. You know, I've been thinking a lot about Rick Pitino today, so I'll say Kazuchika Okada is not walking through that door. I don't think that's literally through that door. I don't think that's happening. But it's exciting.
It's a metaphorical door.
It is. It's fun. I mean, I gasped when it was Kenta. I'm not smart enough to have recognized the logos. That didn't mean anything to me. So when he ripped the mask off, I was like, holy shit, Kenta is actually here. So it's exciting. It's fun. I can't imagine not enjoying it.
Yeah. And sorry, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm surprised that Aaron was not familiar with the Reversal brand and is up on his JMMA. I mean, come on. Like, as soon as you saw the Reversal logo, it was a little K. Like,
I'm a weeb.
Do you not,
but not
watch Ryzen?
Kind of, I'm not that kind of weeb.
Yeah. Do you not watch Rising or Heroes or...
No.
I'm trying to think of what the other... Jewels? I've just ran through all the various JMMA promotions I know.
I don't watch any MMA at all.
So in terms of what, you know, Tony might get out of it, of basically, you know, allowing Jon Moxley to go to the Strong studio, tape a promo, tape an angle, tape a match, all of which, you know, he did not have any legal obligation to do, because it, you know, stands to reason that he has the exclusive rights to book Jon Moxley in the United States of America. Well, we're getting a Kenta match because that's been announced. Like we said, Omega and Kenta versus Moxley and Archer. Funny that, you know, all four of those people are, you know, late of New Japan. So it's people that probably the New Japan office was comfortable putting Kenta in there with. Like, oh, yeah, no, we're fine with Lance Archer. That's no problem. And, you know, I think the Super J-Cast said something to this effect, which is that, you know, Tony Khan might have done this just because he's like a wrestling fan and he would find it exciting. And we know he's an old school Ring of Honor fan. He's probably an old school Kenta fan. So doing, you know, some kind of invasion on his television is just exciting from that perspective. It's the same thing that Kenny Omega said when he did the Wrestling Observer interview, talking about, you know, we think there is value in not just doing stuff to appeal to the casual fans, like having Shaq in an angle or in a match on your show, but we think that there's value and you can grow the product by really exciting your core fans. And that's exactly who this is targeted to, like the Impact thing, like you said.
And it's something where, like, and promoting your hardcore fans makes a lot of more sense, because other than, like, awareness and maybe just watching that angle for Shaq and Cody, who's to say that that's going to deliver any sort of affinity towards AEW? You might just be – there are so many people who bought that Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather WrestleMania and never came back. So – it's smart tapping into this, and then it's also something that it's in New Japan's interest to get in good with AEW. And this was always felt like an inevitability, I would have said, because for their New Japan of America things, they need to be able to have some people to go out to those shows when those eventually happen. When you look at how those shows were built up in the Southeast last year, it was real bad. It was real bad, and especially when you like look at something about the fact that Madison Square Garden, I think that they still really want to get back there and be able to do a co-promotion there. I think that's now more of a natural fit, and I feel like that there's some synergies there that can play into it, that it made sense. It was just was something for such a long time, it just was noxious discourse. Now it's just like, it's not interesting to talk about this right now until we actually have stuff to talk about. And now, I mean, the world is open, and there's a lot of ways that this can go.
Yeah, and I do think you're right about AEW being the dominant partner in the relationship, especially as it concerns, you know, promoting in the U.S. Because, you know, we've discussed AEW kind of ate New Japan America's lunch, because, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we've got these big Western stars, Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks, and we're going to try and, you know, start a regular touring promotion here. And then, you know, they went and started their own promotion basically and pissed everybody off. But, you know, New Japan was never going to do weekly live major cable television station American Pro Wrestling. So, you know, it's kind of like, what was the real missed opportunity there? But yeah, and then they certainly have the dominant position, like I said, in terms of Jon Moxley contract status. And Jon Moxley is the piece that New Japan really wanted here, because he has their title and they want to use him because he's a big star. So, yeah, that totally all fits. I do, you know, Kenny and Kota Ibushi are cryptically tweeting weird things about kingdoms at each other. You know, so that's a big match you can do for big money in both countries on both continents. So why not?
I do want to pour a little bit of cold water on this whole deal.
Yeah, baby. Let's get people angry. Let's go.
Here's why. It struck me during this episode that looking back, all the times when I get really excited about AEW, it's because they bring out this new big idea that they have. But the follow-up almost always sucks. The execution is really bad. It's like, it's very relatable in that I love to come up with ideas, but I'm really bad at following through on them. But I think Tony Khan might have a similar problem. I think about the Shaq and Cody thing, right? That was like, oh, this is interesting. You did this whole deal with Jade coming out, and she references Shaq, and then they just like a big wet fart of like of Shaq's first appearance on the show.
Big who care.
Yeah, big who care. It was bad. You think about, okay, we got this idea for, we're going to have Sting come in and he's going to be teamed with Darby. And then it's like, fuck, what do we do for the next 5 weeks? I don't know. Let's just what if every week we bring them out to the ring and they say something similar and then Taz interrupts them and he says something similar. Would that be cool? So I'm a little concerned about where it might go and if it'll actually pay off for the excitement that I have. So I just wanted to dash that little bit of cold water.
I do agree with you, but I kind of enjoy wrestling more from a perspective of looking forward of what could happen and what direction that they're building into than I often enjoy the actual delivery of that promise, I guess. Maybe that's just because, you know, I've been watching a lot of, you know, most of the wrestling I've watched in my life has been bad. But yeah, I just, you know, for a television show especially, maybe this is a different calculus when you're talking about a pay-per-view or a live event. For a television show, having the big cliffhanger at the end where you go, oh, holy shit, I got to tune in next week. That's more exciting to me than like if they had just had the really good main event that they had. You know, so that's, I guess I'm not really disagreeing with you. Just I kind of don't care yet.
And it's something where I think having a arched eyebrow and skepticism is fitting for this because we have now the back history that Aaron said about how they follow up what feels like to be hot angles. I mean, how many weeks in a row did we have Elite versus Inner Circle brawls that kind of petered off and then we had Stadium Stampede? So it's something where I think that when we talk about goodwill, it goes both ways. You can have negative goodwill. Like, that's an intangible asset. Yeah, I've been reading the WWE 10K annual report today and discovering about their mind clearing things. But it's something where I think that as soon as people get their expectations kind of measured by this, I think that then you're able to talk about like how do we grow from this to here. I mean, like you look at someone like just for example, who knows what Shota Umino has done pretty much over the last 13 months. Like he showed up in the UK, then COVID happened, and you just like look up that, and he never appeared like in the LA dojo and things like this. So there's a lot of ways that could be relatively lower stakes ways that they could build up this relationship that I'm actually more interested in, to be honest, than I am about having Wrestle Dynasty. Isn't that what that show is going to be called? Wrestle Dynasty.
Yes.
Wrestle Dynasty, Kenny versus Kota Ibushi and Madison Square Garden. Like that's more interesting to me because I like to see what comes out of that personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I don't know that a lot of people in our little sphere would even disagree with that. I, you know, it doesn't have to be. Nobody's excited about this relationship because they want to see. I picked on Togi Makabe last week, so Tomohiro Ishii on Dynamite every week, like that's not going to happen. People shouldn't want that to happen. Like AEW has enough talent that they can't get on Dynamite, you know, for months at a time or whatever. But you know, having a Shota Umino be able to go out and get reps on Dark is like pretty interesting. Or like being able to say, hey, you know, we've got these top flight kids who are really good, but, you know, very young. So they just don't have a ton of reps. Let's go put them in the junior tag league and they can be off television for a while and just go, you know, work in front of some different crowds. Like that's much more interesting. And like, even if you're like a, you know, one of these New Japan purists, like kind of hard to object to, like, oh, there's always going to be guest teams in the tag league anyway. Like, why not have it be somebody that, you know, you'll be able to keep an eye on going forward throughout their career.
And to like use this almost as like a bridge into talking about the other big thing there, something that's going to be considered at least for the near future, probably into 2022, is the fact that if let's say you brought up Tomohiro Ishii. If Tomohiro Ishii was going to show up at Revolution, he has to leave Japan, do 14 days of quarantine, then do Revolution, then fly from Jacksonville back to Japan and do another 14 days of quarantine. So you're talking about losing a month to do this. So like this is at least we're in a scenario now where you're going to want to like foster something that someone's going to do these kind of like having like people appear on shows is going to be kind of hard because of just the logistics behind it. But having people, like you said, Top Flight go work the Super Junior Tag League, or having Shota Umino live in Jacksonville and do all the tapings, that seems a lot more rational. And I think that's something that when we like look at this and we also look at the Women's Eliminator Tournament, that's something to keep in mind as well.
I really like the idea of Cody and QT building a little dorm on the side of the Nightmare Factory for Shota Umino to live in. It's very amusing to me. The Nightmare Dorm.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
That does take us over to the other big news, big exciting news from this week's episode. The other thing that made me just make a dumb noise when it happened, the both brackets, I guess, were actually announced for the Women's Eliminator Tournament. Obviously, the Japanese side has gotten a lot more interest, at least in our little part of the world. I'm not sure if that's true everywhere, but yeah. So we're going to get two brackets, a U.S. bracket, a Japanese bracket. The Japanese bracket will take place in Japan. No news on how that will air or where it will air. I think it's safe to assume it's going to be probably a YouTube property more than like being on Dynamite, but I don't know. But all we know is that those two brackets are going to happen. The winners will match up in America, is my understanding. So I'm not exactly sure how that will work. And you'll get a shot at Hikaru Shida for winning the title. Hikaru Shida, for some reason, is in Japan now. Having to do with this tournament.
Well, she's so, coordinating it. She's got it and producing it.
Perhaps so. That's
scouting.
She said she's working on it. She said, I'm in Japan working on the tournament. So that's the, I'm taking her at her word.
Sure. So yeah, Shida's in Japan. That's what's going to happen. Here are the brackets. The U.S. side, Serena Deeb, Riho, Britt Baker, Ty Conti, Thunder Rosa, Nyla Rose, Anna Jay, and Layla Hirsch. A damn good bracket on its own.
Yeah, really, all those women are good. All those women are good wrestlers. I guess the one omission, the Golden Globe snub, would be Big Swole. Not sure if she's just not, if she's got a health situation or whatever. But that would be, I think, the big AEW pushed women's talent that is not in there.
I think I'd put all these... I mean, I'm not a Deeb head like everybody else, I don't think. But I think other than her, I would probably put all these people above Big Swole.
Probably Layla is the person. But yeah. Like that would probably be between the two.
I mean, I think Big Swole is probably a better worker than some of those women. Just some of them are more green than she is. But yeah, certainly in terms of how much focus they've gotten on television recently, you know, Layla's had the one Dynamite match where she was, basically there at a job to Penelope, and so yeah, she's probably bottom of the totem pole.
But the exciting thing for, because it includes a bunch of people either that we haven't seen in a long time or that we've never seen in AEW, the Japanese side of the bracket: Aja Kong, Yuka Sakazaki, Veni, or the better known as Japan's Asuka, Emi Sakura, Ryo Mizunami, Mei Tsuruga, Rin Karakura, and Maki Ito. So a stacked bracket. I think a lot of kind of what we at least wish casted might happen, but still pretty surprising. And I think Asuka/Veni being the most surprising addition here.
Yeah, really good lineup. You know, I kind of, Maki Ito, I kind of assumed was going to happen. Yuka Sakazaki, I think we probably assumed was going to happen. Yeah, I think very cool to see Aja Kong and Ryo Mizunami come back. They're, of course, on Double or Nothing and then pretty much have not been seen in AEW since, except for Aja Kong's one walkout appearance that she did fly from Japan to do on Fight for the Fallen. the thing that really popped me, I think, was the Apple Girl, Mei Suruga, just because she's, you know, we've watched some of the Choco Pro Gato Move content and TJPW content. Wait, and she's done that promotion. And discussed it on the Patreon. And, you know, she's obviously like a super talent waiting to break out. So her getting involved there was exciting. And, you know, she's also, they do a live stream of like her and Imi Sakura and Balianaki, like on a weekly basis watching AEW. So just very fun. And like you get invested in, I'm pursuing my dream of being a pro wrestler, and here's me reacting to getting a huge booking in, you know, a large American pro wrestling company.
It's just really cool, and it's something like when they tape or when they air the Japanese side of the bracket, it's going to be really kind of cool just because you have eight very different wrestlers in there too, and with different skill levels and different styles and of course like different levels of experience. So it's really just like a compelling block here, and then you like look at how this is going to go logistically. Like when they first announced this, I speculated that before like the thing came out that they were going to have to tape all this in Japan. Like there's no way you're going to be doing live from Japan to either Dark or to Dynamite, and it appears that they've done so, that these matches are in the can. And then you get into the fact of, unless you have someone like, I guess, really, unless you have like someone like Rio over there, like you're pretty much going to have some level of potentially a first time matchup in the finals, and whomever comes out of the Japanese block, I mean, as I said earlier about how it works with travel and quarantine and like this, they might be getting a good solid run on TV, which would be really kind of cool to see. Like, who's to say if like Maki Ito is the one who wins the Japanese block and she comes to the States for the final, and then you get, and then since she's going to be over here and it's just not going to be worth it to have someone over there just for one match and fly back given COVID now, see like Maki Ito on TV. Like I think that's really exciting. Having Aja Kong back was really interesting. The person that I'm like looking at out of this block that I think is probably the person that I expect to win it is Yuka Sakazaki though, but it's interesting stuff. I'm really stoked about this.
Yeah, I would also lean Yuka Sakazaki, mostly because, if I had to guess, probably not super easy for them to secure a new visa to bring over like a Maki Ito at this point in time. So I'm guessing the winner would be somebody that's already been in the States for AEW. So that leaves, you know, Yuka or Aja or Emi Sakura. So yeah, I would lean Yuka as well. How about you, Aaron?
Well, I was thinking about that very issue, Nate, and I am not an immigration expert, but I believe I believe Maki and Asuka both would have gotten visas because they were supposed to be in New York last year, or in Orlando, rather.
Tampa,
wherever the hell they were going to be. They were supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Actually, Maki was in New York, so she probably has a visa. I don't know. You know, I know that there's sometimes it's tied to the person you're doing work for, so perhaps that is a complicating factor.
But to my knowledge, not so much, because of there's someone that was on this very program or in a promotion that was in this very program that was on a visa done by another group, but they never worked for the other group other than the reason they got the visa.
That's true. So
I don't want to blow up their spot. I don't want to blow up this visa loophole.
That's fair. But it seems to me that everybody here except Mei Suruga or Rin Karakura has either been in America in the last few years or was scheduled to be in America pre-COVID. So I would expect that any other than those two have visas.
Yeah, you may be right. I don't, like you said, I don't know. I did take a course on this, but
I did too.
I didn't learn anything in it. I just, no. You know, passed it.
The only thing I learned was that it takes like 20 years to like get into the U.S. legally.
Yeah. To get like the, to win the lottery basically is, you know, essentially impossible to do. Yeah.
There's only one wrestler that people know of has won the green card lottery.
Oh yeah.
Claudio Castagnoli's Cesaro.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he won the green card lottery, and that's why he ended up in Chikara.
It just always made me think, when people used to be like, get in the back of the line, I'd be like, you motherfuckers don't know how long this line is.
The line is essentially doesn't exist. It's right. A maze. But yeah, don't know. You know, I have reason to believe you can add additional employers into an already existing visa. I also don't know what kind of period those visas were on, or that the people that were booking these people got the proper visas in the first place. So
yes, yeah. Also true. But yeah, Yuka Sakazaki makes a boatload of sense. So she's been here for AEW. They clearly were behind her when she was able to come over. I don't know that this plays any role into it, but she recently lost the TJPW Princess of Princess title. So she could disappear for a month maybe and hang out in the States and do a couple of Dynamites. When it was first announced, we all assumed Riho would win the Japanese side and they bring her back. But she's in the U.S. and is clearly on the U.S. side of the bracket. So
I was going to ask, is there a chance that Riho won the American block and they already had her do the match in Japan? Because that's something that I want.
That would have been a good fix, oh. I think. The Marvelous Twitter account did say that the winner of the Japanese block will go to the U.S. to face the winner of the American block. So
well, there we go.
That's Hikaru Shida retweeted that. So I'm taking her retweet to be an endorsement of Marvelous, that's Women's Pro Wrestling, being correct on that point. But that, you know, that hasn't been confirmed by AEW or anything.
You know, another thing I could see them doing is running back Riho versus Emi Sakura as a final.
The other
worked together before.
The other thing, Aja Kong made a tweet about wanting to see Nyla Rose. And of course, Hikaru Shida and Aja Kong had like a famously good match relatively recently, probably Aja Kong's best match in her last few years of her career. So that would also be an appropriate final if they wanted to run that match back and be like, hey, let's fucking do this kick-ass Aja Kong match again.
The really interesting thing to me as a Joshi fan is going to be what the matchups are going to be on the Japanese side. Like, you would assume it's going to be interpromotional, right? Like Yuka versus Maki, Mei versus Emi, Rin Katakura versus Mizunami because they both work Marvelous, Veni versus Aja because they're both freelancers. So that would make the most sense logistically, but it'll be way more fun if they mix up things and do some matchups that none of us have ever seen before. So that would be cool.
Give us Aja Kong versus Mei Suruga. That's the match that needs to happen here.
That would be cool. I'm here for that. I would like to see Asuka versus Yuka Sakazaki. I would love to. Or versus Mei. That would also be fun. Asuka versus, I don't know, I guess I should call her Vanny so I can get in the mode of doing this. But yeah, versus one of those people would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of potential exciting matchups. And just part of what made this show like such a joy to watch, I think, was getting this announcement like fresh on the or in close proximity to like the Shaquille O'Neal is going to wrestle on Dynamite stuff. Like, you really got just everything you could want for as far as like a buffet of pro wrestling. You got kick-ass matches on the show, you got kick-ass talent announcements, you got a big celebrity involvement angle that, you know, the kind of thing that would typically only happen on a WrestleMania or whatever, and then you got like a genuine shocking, you know, landscape shifting angle at the end. I think an all-time episode of Dynamite, if not the best one ever.
All right. Since we didn't play E-Lead or D-Lead, I still want to throw in the listener ones, and this will drive us into, I think, the other big event from the show. So the listener Elite, I should have asked this person how they pronounce this name. I don't know. V-O-G-T-U-J.
Vogtage.
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 We're going Vogtage. So listener Vogtage, their Elite pick, Miro attacking the box knowing that it was a trap was pretty great. And listener Drew, definitely not Mike's brother again, for sure.
Wow.
His delete, wedding angle, a big fat fucking who care, AEW has too many lateral ass feuds. He says the wedding was especially egregious because it's been the whole focal point for Miro in the company so far, and everyone sort of came off like geeks. Then the whole episode, everyone's talking about how wild wrestling weddings get, which really just made their failure to deliver more obvious. So a lot of different takes on the wedding.
Really, you got called out for the nepotism last week, selecting a leader delete by Drew Spears. And then you just
doubled down.
I'm talking to Aaron. Doubled down on it in spite of that criticism. You heard what the people were saying. You observed this complaint, and you just said, no, the people are wrong. I'm right.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to deal with criticism, I think, is to ignore it and lean right into what you were already doing. So that's what I've decided to do here.
That's how the Young Bucks became Hall of Fame tag team.
But I also thought Drew did the best job. I don't want to say that. I don't want to make our listeners mad, who also gave their thoughts on the wedding. But I just thought he did a good job of laying out the negative side of the wedding. You know, I think I talked last week about how Miro had said on Talk Is Jericho, like, oh, you know, we have this big plan for the best man. You know, it's going to be great. It's a perfect way for me to come into AEW. So I think this segment kind of had two things, where one, it was cool that they tried to, you know, take the piss out of like all the tropes of wrestling weddings. Like, that was fun. But on the other hand, it ends up as like, oh man, this is just going to lead to what, a tag match with Miro and Kip versus Chuck and Orange Cassidy. It's like we were already there, so it's kind of a bummer of how it ends up.
Yeah, I did not really mind it at all. I really mostly enjoyed it for Miro acting like a superstar and subverting all those wrestling tropes and be like, nope, I'm a step ahead of you. I'm actually not a big dumbass. I'm gonna attack the box like Vogtage said. And I'm gonna not let the priest throw to anybody to interrupt it or whatever. The sinister minister, rather. I just think probably you kind of just needed something a little bit bigger as like the coup de grace here, because it is an angle you've been building since literally Miro showed up to be the best man in this segment. Is why he's here in the company ostensibly, and like they just. They didn't even get enough cake on Penelope's face. Like, the cake should have exploded or something. You kind of just needed, I think, a little bit more of a spectacle to make it fully land. But I enjoyed it for the most part.
I felt like the issue with like these beats that try to hit, like first Chuck saying like, oh, this present's for me. Then it takes Miro a way too long to open it and like to throw the paper like this. And then the setup for him getting handcuffed to the bottom rope while they mildly get Penelope into the cake and beat up Kip. It just made it drag on, and it seemed like that there were time cues and things like this that if it was heightened up, if we didn't have Miro start doing Hadaway during this, I feel like that this would have come across like, okay, this is a wrestling wedding. Miro was ahead of everything, but he did not check the cake. But it's just like, this is, it's all of this built to something that we were already at, like how AB said, like, we don't really have anything that Charles Taylor did as the butler other than being forced to say that Miro was his best friend. There was opportunities for like having backstage or like, we got this tape in from the best man Miro about how Chuck Taylor has been as a butler. We didn't get any of that. Like, it felt like that it was very much like, oh, we've been promising this. Well, here's how we're getting to this, and we're going to be at the exact same place that we were before this all even started.
Yeah, the little bit of a missed opportunity that they didn't hit us with some more the Butler Charles Taylor segments.
All right, well, we'll get into the rest of the show in a minute, but first let's talk about the ratings for this week. AEW jumps back up to 844,000 viewers, up from 734 last week. Third in the demo, just below NBA with a 0.32. Good demo number for them. NXT, I mean, folks, they got their asses kicked. They went down from 720 to 610,000. 51st in the demo, fell off the chart from 24th, 0.15.
So I'm going to list two dates for a second. First one, we have the rating from this week, where they had an 8-minute overrun, which is partly a ploy to boost up your average rating share, where Edge was announced, the Royal Rumble winner, Edge. I think he's technically a WWE Hall of Famer, was announced 24 hours ahead of time. And they brought him in there. They had a big face off there, which apparently didn't do anything, by the way. And they had the exact same rating that they had the day of impeachment. They tried to do all of this just to get the exact same rating and demo as the impeachment. So tap out. Like that's as big of an indictment on their attempt of blocking AEW by putting NXT on Wednesday nights as anything. Just fast forward to when NHL is going to put hockey on USA and NXT has to go to like Thursday or anywhere else, because that's bad. The two things that beat AEW were the Challenge and the NBA, and nothing else was really interesting other than the finale of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City did trash. I was about to cuss there, but Nate, I thought about the conversation we had anywhere. I was going to call it dog poop, but it was utter trash. Like, it finished like 35th. So that's Mike's ratings report, and I didn't cuss.
So AEW now can just beat. Here's the like, by I called Jericho out because he was supporting the Trump administration and actively hurting his own promotion's ratings, and now you see the other side of it. When Trump is not there to create all this news, AEW can be third in the demo and beat out all the news programs, and they're not losing to Tucker Carlson and Hannity and all this shit. So. Yeah, there you go. It's in your own self-interest, Chris Jericho. I mean, it was in the first place because you're giving them $40,000 like a mark. But yeah, even more so now.
I guess thank you, President Biden, is what we're saying.
Yeah, doing a great job. Currently trying to fuck us over out of our free pandemic money.
Can you believe we're going to lose that money? I'm so pissed off.
As soon as it's confirmed that we're not getting it, I'm going to say that the stop the steal coup should have succeeded. We should have just let them do it, because the Democrats aren't going to do anything for us anyway.
We would have gotten more money, at least, probably.
Hard to say. Kind of hard to say.
Arguable.
I don't know. I don't want to get into this.
I am rolling away from this conversation before we get any deeper.
I'm just saying that the government should give us all free money regularly. That's what I'm saying. That's all.
Very
I'm saying.
Simple.
Okay.
It's not like they promised it to us or anything.
Right. Exactly. It's not like there's a fucking 5-minute supercut I see going around Twitter of like $2,000 checks out the door immediately.
It's not like that. It was the thing that they campaigned on in special elections in Georgia to make sure that they were able to get a 50-50 split in the Senate, of which they did not do away with the filibuster when they had the opportunity to.
See, that's why I'm so mad. I fucking hate John Ossoff. I think he's one of the worst people that's ever existed in human history. And the fact that I had to root for him to be a fucking United States senator, this McKinsey-ass 31-year-old or whatever, it's like... it really irritates me because I'm not even getting $2,000 out of it.
Right. You'd be happy to do it for $2,000.
Yes, I will. I'll sell my soul for $2,000. Are you kidding me?
How many McKinsey people would you want to have in Congress for like $10,000?
If I get $2,000 a month, then any of them, 100.
Hey, what was John Ossoff doing in 2017? Because that's the only time that I've tweeted about him.
Documentarian.
Tweeting,
for a while.
Mostly.
Yeah, really? Tweeting, following... various dead meme accounts.
He was very clearly a CIA agent. I won't hear otherwise. He was making documentaries in like the fucking I forget where he was now, but it's like something that's like obvious.
It's both him and Mayor Pete. Like, don't get me started. Mayor Pete,
we talked about this on Light one day, but
I got in trouble for my Mayor Pete belief, me calling him potentially a war tourist.
Oh, he is an absolute operator. There's no doubt about it. I won't hear otherwise. But
boy, we're choosing to talk about this on probably the biggest AEW news day in at least 12 months.
Yeah, we'll probably get a lot of new listeners, and we're talking about how Mayor Pete is an op. All right. Good point. You're right. I'll stop now. Okay.
No, I mean, I have a lot more. We could get into some conspiracy here.
Produced
I got some...
BBC investigation about ISIS war crimes and death squads at East Africa.
Okay, let me tell you something about that. Yeah. Because I went down a wormhole on that. That documentary has never surfaced.
Do you remember me talking about like how you get money from foreign film companies? Yes. No, this is straight up like CIA dark money. This is being used to launder probably drug money, I would say.
I'm just very skeptical.
I said, if you want to go down conspiracy hole, Aaron, I will go down there first. I'll be waving the flag as we're going down into hell.
I love it. That's a curse, Mike.
Hell? No, that's a literal location. Hell.
Hell is a curse, for sure.
Nate, hell is not a curse.
Nate, I felt like I cut you off on something you wanted to say about this documentary.
No, I had nothing else. I was going to wade into muddy waters.
Okay. So here's the other stuff we haven't talked about from the show yet. It kicked off with the tag team battle royale. Chris Jericho is your ultimate winner, so he and MJF win. He eliminated Sammy Guevara and Darius Martin last. I just want to say that starting the show with this instead of a 20-minute tag match, great idea. This was much more fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've complained that they do these battle royales to identify challengers instead of just like booking toward them. But it's kind of, I can't really complain about it because they're so good at booking these battle royales and they're so efficient in getting characters and feuds and stories across. And they're just highly entertaining matches where guys get a bunch of shine, and you advance a bunch of things at the same time. It was great.
My only complaint about this match was there were a lot of really cool moments that direction let down. Like, especially, like, the no water in the pool, the Stalker Chikawa dive from the top rope into no one. They missed that. And there was a couple of, there was, like, another sick elimination they missed. But, yeah, this is, if you're just going to go up there and do spots and people just, like, crash out of the ring in some of the more brutal ways possible, I'm here for it. And thank you for doing the choke slam from in the ring to the floor to stop that dork that was complaining about it. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. This was a lot of fun.
I do think the direction was a little off all night. Like, had a lot of spots where we just saw, like, you know, 80% of the frame was one guy's back, and he's like, "Can we get please see clearly what's happening?" Like, yeah.
Next, Jade Cargill gets a hype video. She's working out, baby. She's in the gym. You know, just showing off how strong she is. So cool video.
Big star. Hope she can wrestle.
Yeah.
It's something that, like, she came across even more of a star that we thought she was, you know? It was awesome.
The AEW star-making machine is just in full effect, fully operational.
Never lost.
Overheating,
never
maybe.
Lost.
Absolutely. Okay, next up, our weekly segment, Darby and Sting in the ring with Tony Schiavone. Tony tells us Darby is actually going to be defending the TNT title. He's going to defend it next week against Joey Janela. Team Taz interrupts, folks. They're outside. They haven't been led into the building because they got fined for beating up some people last week. Poor Brian Cage. Couldn't even... They took his shirt. They fined him so badly. He took the shirt off his back. They said they're going to be at the match next week. Ricky says, Sting, I don't think you're the icon anymore. You know, he's suggesting they might interfere in this match. They might get involved. Sting says, hey, I'm going to be there as well, and I'm going to make sure it's a one-on-one match. He says, Ricky, if you don't see the icon when you look in my eyes, maybe you need to take a closer look. So we are led to believe that Sting and his bat somehow going to keep all of Team Taz out of the ring.
Well, he's got a bat, so.
Yeah.
I just was stunned that I just ran this segment again. Like, okay, they understood the criticism. They get the picture that we're tired of Sting and Darby taking the ring and then Team Taz interrupt them. They've done it for a literal month in a row. They actually put them in dilapidated church for 1 week instead just to mix it up. And then they just went right back to it like, well, we tried literally nothing. Let's go back to what works or doesn't work. But whatever. It's fine. Who cares?
After that, the women's match very early this week in the first hour, and it was a barn burner, folks. Britt Baker defeated Thunder Rosa with the lockjaw. There was a spot where a Rebel exposed the turnbuckle, and Britt did a drop toe hold of Rosa into it and then clapped the lockjaw on while she was knocked out.
Yeah, match kicked ass. It was really good. Thunder Rosa, I think, needs to take Hot Young Briley to her school and teach him how to lay shit in, because she was just knocking the shit out of Britt Baker the whole time. Britt Baker has added a bunch of like cool technical little go-behinds and roll-ups and transitions into her repertoire, like going from a pin into the lockjaw and out of a crucifix into this and that, and was just like, you know, showed us something. So I'm glad that certainly nobody on this podcast said that she's been wrestling long enough that she is what she is, that she'll never improve, because she's actually always been good.
I'm also glad about that.
I mean, they protected her a lot in this match, y'all. Like, I like this match a whole lot. I went 3 3/4 on it. But making like about 4 solid minutes of it being a walk and brawl, which worked really well. Like, I felt like that Rosa in control, constantly brawling around ringside, making sure that she rolled in to broke the count. I counted at least 5 times that she did that in a row, that she constantly was brawling. And I feel like that this was a match that, if anything, really kind of convinced me that, I think with the exception of Riho, Thunder Rosa is the best women's wrestler they have on the roster. And because I think that she's consistently been putting in great matches, and it's something that, if anything, I'm really excited about the potential of Thunder Rosa in this tournament and seeing the kind of matchups that we will get coming out of that. Like, Rosa versus Ty Conti. Like, that's a match that, if I had the pencil and I was doing that, that would be my first round match there, because that rocked. And then the finishing stretch going into the lockjaw with all that was pretty inspired, and I felt like that it made Thunder Rosa not look like an idiot as the babyface who missed that. Instead, it was like machinations that got it, and I thought this was a really solid match, and it built up on all the hype, and they had a good video package beforehand. Like, they did a good job of building this thing, and it felt like that as a blow-off for this feud, I'd call it just a full marks across the board, a full success.
My theory is Britt is training with Rosa.
Why not?
That's no, good that's idea. Good.
Yeah.
And that it's like
everyone should be in that roster, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely. But you can imagine like they're working together and then they're like, wait, can we get a feud out of this? Like, can we work on TV together? They get put together this match. They have a really good match. Like, no, I'm pro that. I just think that's probably what's been happening.
Yeah, sure.
Matt Hardy and Adam Page are backstage with Tony. This is from last week. Matt is letting everyone know he has no ulterior motives. He's just known Page for a long time. They're good Carolina boys. Page, you know, he's a little put off. He says, hey, I just want to dress in here, nothing else. Matt Hardy says, hey, it made me mad when Serpentico and Dr. Luther ruined Brody Jr.'s birthday party. So why don't you join me for one time only to make things right with the Dark Order? And Adam Page says, sure, one time only. Led into this match, Matt Hardy and Adam Page defeating the Chaos Project. Matt Hardy got the pinfall after blind tagging in after Page hit the Buckshot Lariat.
Yeah, I kind of really enjoyed this despite myself. I really thought Matt Hardy has nailed like the manipulative speak that is necessary, and did a good job sussing out the reason for why this team was happening and why it makes sense in storyline, and why Adam Page would agree to it, and what Matt Hardy gets out of it. That was all set up very efficiently. And then the match was quite good. You had there was a moment where Hangman Page like dodged out of a Luther dive off the apron, and he did a tumble from the apron onto the ground and took a big bump. And Page just kind of did a Jim Halpert stare to the camera. And it was like, hey, well, that's novel. You can have somebody like engage with the camera in a charismatic way and like look cool that doing it that way. Like, you forget that like WWE, they would be like, no, you can't acknowledge the cameras. Also, you can't interact with any of the fans at ringside. It's like you have to exist in this little bubble. This was back when crowds existed. And I just like appreciated that for a second. Like, wow, he can just like act like he's in a sporting competition and there's a camera there and do something charismatic to the camera. That's cool. And then, yeah, Hardy being the heel that he is steals the pinfall again. So, yeah, I thought this was, you know, I think we're all kind of down on Matt Hardy being ubiquitous in this promotion, but in a vacuum, pretty good, tidy little story segment for them.
we've literally done the thing with Adam Page where somebody steals the pinfall at the end, blind tags in and steals the pinfall. It was Adam fucking Page before. So it's like,
well, he's getting a taste of his own medicine. I kind of like the idea of everybody trying to get a piece of him still. And this is, it's not just that, oh, I have to go and find myself and learn how to be a solo guy away from the elite, and like having obstacles to that in his way and tribulations and things that he has to overcome, rather than just being like, oh, I'm just going to start winning matches now. Now he has to, I guess, get through Matt Hardy too. I think it's fine.
We see MJF and Chris Jericho celebrating their earlier win. Jericho, you know, they go into that little room they're always in, Inner Circle's hanging out. Jericho says, yeah, we're all in this together. Sammy says he's not so sure. He leaves. Jericho runs after him. MJF wants to have a conversation with the rest of the Inner Circle, asks Wardlow to close the door, kick the cameraman out.
So we might finally be getting some advancement in this storyline. Maybe, probably not. Probably we have another 5 weeks until Revolution, so who knows?
Hard to care, honestly. Yeah. I'm excited about the Ultimate Sammy MJF match. I think that's going to be fun. But other than that, I don't really care. The wedding happened, which we've discussed. We saw a Shaq video from Inside the NBA saying he's going to wrestle in the match, and they announce it for March 3rd on Dynamite. So the match is official.
What did you think of Shaq's signature maneuver, the Black Tornado?
It looked strikingly similar to a little move I like to call the Judas effect. So I'm a little worried about that.
Hey, there's a second strike with the
Black Tornado. There's two elements. He does a Judas effect, and then he's like, now I have to do something else. And then I do it this way also. And now he's really flails. Being a nuisance.
Well, then I would tell him he should speak with Cody's nemesis, Chris Jericho, and get some training, because the Judas effect knocks people out in one shot. So he shouldn't need a second strike. He's a lot bigger than Chris Jericho too, you know, so.
I hope he has Kenny or Ernie like second him for the match. That'd be very funny to me. Chuck's not going to do it, but
Chuck doesn't care.
Ernie out there would be a riot.
Yeah. I was imagining Ernie out there with a rally towel trying to rally the crowd up. It's interesting. Of course, the NBA All-Star competition has been announced for that Sunday that Revolution's on, it seems. So made sense to do this on TV because Shaq, of course, is going to be in Atlanta for the All-Star game. And I think this is a smart move. I think that putting this on TV, hopefully you tape it and just in case, and not have this thing go live without any editing. I think that this is like a good plan for it. And I thought that finally Shaq showed some of his personality here, and that was kind of good. And he almost killed Kenny Smith with the plexiglass divider with the Black Tornado. It's a very dangerous move, Aaron. You really need to show it some respect.
I loved him being like, they have these plexiglass dividers up, but then he just walked right over to Kenny Smith and was like, okay, well, what's the point of these dividers? So that was kind of dumb. I don't know. Some people suggested that I heard wrong, I suppose, but I thought they had definitely announced this was going to be on Revolution. So I'm not sure if it's a change because of NBA. I don't know. But I will say, I think it's much less likely anybody would have bought the pay-per-view to see Shaq in a match versus people will flip over to watch Shaq on TNT for free in this match. So I think it's probably a better business idea anyway to have him on TV.
Well, they get paid more from TV than they do on pay-per-view.
So, also true.
There's that as well. If this could be the thing that brings them back over a million viewers, then hey, that's a big feather in your cap.
Oh, if this doesn't get over a million viewers, it's an L for AEW. Lance Archer defeated Eddie Kingston in their follow-up lumberjack match, which did not stop people from getting involved, by the way. Lance hit the blackout and got the logical clean pinfall over Eddie here.
Really fun clusterfuck. They're good at these things. You know, it's similar to the Battle Royale book in that you get a lot of little pieces where it's like you just get, you know, just enough of Jack Evans to be like, oh yeah, Jack Evans. Oh, he's doing this with that guy. That's fun.
And we got Jacob Roberts laying out an helico and taking a moment and like kind of patting an helico and go like, hey kid, that went a lot better than I expected. I'm not dead.
We had FTR and Tully backstage. They're mad. They say that Jungle Boy ran to the principal and tattled on them, so they got suspended. And they're so mad about it that they abducted Marco Stunt for some reason.
Yeah.
Very weird. Fair.
It's fine. Whatever. You know, Pack abducted Michael Nakazawa at some point. You know, abductions happen in wrestling.
Abductions happen, but we've had rulings about abductions on AEW.
Well, they're
AEW.
Already suspended, so.
Then shouldn't they be suspended for longer, suffer fines?
Sure. Yeah, you know, whatever. It's wrestling. Don't care.
I don't care about anything involving FTR, so it's fine. Joey Janela has a pre-tape. He says that Darby and he have a long history of mangling themselves and each other. So next week, they're going to have a match where the stakes have never been so high. So Joey versus Darby next week.
Yeah, good to get a little promo just to put a little attention and heat on that.
Joey needs anything to get him built up, so at least they found time for it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to win, so, you know, it's not like a new direction for him or anything, but it's kind of a fine spot for him. Like, he gets to show his personality, they get to do some sick bump and, you know, remind you, oh, yeah, here's that certain something about Joey Janela that makes him engaging to people. And then, you know, you make Darby look good by beating him.
Then we got to the main event with Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers defeating Jon Moxley, Pac, and Rey Fénix. Gallows pinned Fénix after the Magic Killer. After the match, Lance Archer attacked, cleared the ring. That left Mox and Omega alone in the ring. And Mox got blindsided by Kenta. We go to dark with Kenny posing with his foot on Mox's chest, but Kenta appearing to give him a little side eye, disapproving perhaps of Moxley here. So planting a little seed.
Well, he was explicitly disapproving in the post-show Twitter video that they posted where Kenta was like, hey, brother, Omega was like, hey, brother Kenta, brother Switchblade didn't tell me you were going to be here. And Kenta just told him to shut the fuck up and said, I'm not your friend. So pretty clear that Kenta and the Bullet Club Tokyo has no time for their imitation Bullet Club here. But the match was a fucking joy. Absolutely a blast. I absolutely love Doc Gallows now. He's my favorite wrestler.
He's so good in this.
I couldn't get enough of him feeding for Stu Grayson last week. And this week he was in there with Rey Fénix, and it was just a sight to behold. They should push him and he should win the TNT title, I think. Rey Fénix also just like the fucking best. He's going out there to get pinned in this match and he's like, well, if I'm getting pinned in this match, then I'm going to fucking show everybody why I fucking kick ass. And, you know, that involves all those crazy bonkers spots where he's, you know, diving directly into the guardrail and also like doing moonsaults into raising cutters off the mat. Just genius stuff out of him. This was you know, one of their best matches on TV in a long time, I think, and got me fired up. The ending brought me down a little bit just in that it's like, Rey Fénix, of course he has to get pinned here, but you know, couldn't be mad too long about it because then you got the exciting Kenta angle. Now, one delete from this show is that you have a team consisting of the AEW World Champion and the Impact Tag Team Champions and they enter first. Why they should be entering second? They're all the champions. There's three champions.
But heels enter first.
No, champions enter last. That's the rule. Heels enter first is WWE shit.
I mean, I guess, but
yeah, I mean, champion. I mean, certainly, I don't care about the Impact champions, but certainly your world champion mm-hmm. come out yeah. last. I agree.
And they did it right before an ad break. It's like, hey. I know these guys are stars, but Jon Moxley, Pac, Rey Fénix, also pretty big stars. You can have them come out. It reeked the WWE where it's like, oh yeah, sure, CM Punk's the champion, but John Cena, he's the star, so he enters last. It's like, no, Kenny Omega should enter last.
I thought this match rocked. Is Fénix the wrestler of the year so far, at least through the first month? Because he has just been on another plane, and I'm someone who's very high on Fénix, but like him and Pac, great tag team work. That's something that I know, of course, you're always going to have Penta around, but that's a fun tag team that I would love to see more of. Jon Moxley was wearing joggers, which was great. Like, he clearly was not wearing jeans. He was wearing sweatpants, which, hey, it's cold out there. Respect to you for that. And then the hot tag that Phoenix made, because you brought up like his moonsault that he landed on, and then he did like a backhand spring cutter. But his hot tag, and y'all know how I feel about hot tags. Big hot tag guy. When he came in on a springboard and looked like he got 15 feet into the air, and you're just like, are you not like constrained by physics? Like, is there laws of gravities? Like, the man who gravity forgot's your partner, but like, do you not care about it either? And it just rocked in. Doc Gallows doing a whoopee cushion and landing on his balls and just having the best sell ever. Like, Doc Gallows can just be around forever because for some reason, for a guy who's just kind of there, he cracks me up each time he's on screen. We love the Doc Gallows around here.
Well, I gotta say, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson very clearly were like, we are getting in the best shape of our lives right now, and we're going to be able to go out there and work. And I don't know if that was motivated by Impact. I'm inclined to say it's like, oh, we have a chance to be on real TV right now, and we're going to take that chance by the balls.
Yeah, and maybe whenever our Impact deal's up, we can get a deal with AEW, you know, and stick around there. I'm sure those guys literally care about one thing. I don't blame them at all, and it's what's the biggest check we can get next time.
Yeah. Well, the biggest check for the least amount of work. Yeah,
of
exactly.
Course.
Yeah, which respect it.
Couldn't relate to more.
Yeah,
I don't
real working class heroes. If you think about it,
yes. We had, or we discussed this, I think perhaps in a DM, maybe in the Discord today. I don't really care about Gallows pinning Fenix on its own. It's just that it kind of represents to me that they don't see Fenix on the level that I do. Of like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like them to see Fenix as like a single star, and I yeah. don't think they see him that way.
Yeah, and I am sad to say that I think that's been the case for a while, and we should have gotten that message already. But I'm still going to harp on it because he's, you know, one of the top talents in the world and can succeed at any level. They just have to like go with it.
My promise to you, our listeners, is I will never get the message. I will always complain about things. All right, that's Dynamite for this week. If you want to, if you like the show, you want to support our show, head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. We got 3 tiers for your perusal. The middle tier, $5 tier, gets you all the audio we've done, all the audio that we're going to do. This week, this has just got a huge reaction. I mean, everybody's been talking about it. Nate, SB, and I broke down Blackpink's The Show. You know, I just, everybody loved it.
Yeah, I couldn't, did not get enough positive messages or, you know, because my inbox was overflowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. So we did that. We always do at least, you know, one show every week. We also do a show called Light, where we break down Dark and we preview Dynamite, most importantly.
we kind of get around to that after we talk about, you know, my distrust of the ocean, our thought about higher academics, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't listen to the Patreon, a lot of it is, if you can't tell, hey, what do we want to talk about?
Yes. Well, I figure...
We cover stuff on there. Let's be fair.
I mean, you can listen to AEW talk anywhere, right? I figure people listen to our show because they like listening to us. So here's some other shit we'd like to talk about. Mike, I believe you're gonna bring us some more content later this week, right?
Yes, I'm King Content over here. So
that's what we call him.
Yep, that's my name, King Content. I for the last month I've watched the Go Big Show because I do watch a lot of trash TV. I've been watching mainly this and the UK's Love Island lately, and boy, those are some shows. And so yeah, your old pals Go Big Show, Good Time Jamboree will come back, and it's like 15 minutes of me talking about what I saw, who they should sign onto Dynamite, and then something that I've been meaning to do this week, but it's just been too busy. There's been too much stuff going on, and that I will have up sometime is I'm not going to go through Fight Forever the way I did with The Collective and try to watch where I ended up watching 9 out of the 12 shows. I'm going to be picking and choosing, and I'll give my thoughts on the U.S. indie scene as seen through Fight Forever sometime this weekend.
Next week, our Patreon show is, our plan is that Taylor Mainberg is going to join me for an in-depth primer on all the Japanese wrestlers who are going to be in the AEW Women's Title Eliminator Tournament. So if there's some people you aren't that familiar with, this will be a great opportunity for you to learn more about them. And if you sign up, go join the Discord. Also, this is going to be a big month. We got that. We'll have I feel confident we'll do a look back at last year's revolution at some point this month. And of course, next month, you know, early on next month, we'll be doing the revolution. What's it called? Instant reaction. We record those right after.
Live instant reaction.
Oh, wow.
We go live on these things. We've done this twice now.
That's true.
This is the first revolution that we're celebrating an anniversary of, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's only been one revolution.
We got to come up with some sort of thematic game, as we've done with our previous look back shows.
Revolve or evolve?
Revolve or evolve. There's first out the gates.
Not married to it, obviously. Not married to it. Just putting it out there, safe space. Just gonna
right. No bad ideas. Everything goes on the board.
Yep.
So yeah, we got to come up with something for that.
Okay.
You know, comparing matches to famous populist uprisings or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you asked if this is the only revolution anniversary we celebrate. I was like, well, no, the 1917 revolution also we celebrate. Yep. Mm-hmm. How about Yuka Sakazaki was on Revolution last year?
That's right. Yeah, she faced Britt Baker, and Britt Baker tried to knock her teeth out, right?
Well, they did a tag match. I don't want to say too much about it because we'll, of course, be breaking it down in detail.
Of course, yeah.
On the Patreon.
I apologize again.
But yeah, we'll have to come up with something. Okay, that's what we're going to do. Patreon.com/everythingelite. Please join us. Next week on Dynamite, here's what we know so far. Darby Allin versus Joey Janela for the TNT title. A no disqualification, falls count anywhere match. Kenny Omega. I almost said Kenneth. And Kenta versus John
Kenneth
Moxley
Jerome.
And Lance Archer.
Kenneth
Yes.
It apparently is not a lights out match, so this has been sanctioned.
I did notice in the tweet that Tony Khan had booked the match. So
yeah, that was so. If you didn't see the video, Kenny suggested, hey, Kenta doesn't work here, so you can't sanction a match. So let's make it a lights out match next week. And that, of course, would allow them to not reflect it on the AEW win loss records, etc. But they appear to have gone away from that. Maybe they don't want to set the expectations of what the previous lights out match looked like in this company. And they didn't, New Japan didn't want Kenta going into any barbed wire, spider webs, or anything.
Glass, you know. I mean, you could do it in Duval County. Duval County will probably let you do a spider web and bare boards and glass yards if you want to. So, I mean, probably for the best. I mean, No Peace Underground has been wrestling in Florida and hasn't gotten locked down yet. So, you know, they could have probably... It's probably for the best that Kenta's not involved, just to be honest.
I was thinking about this. So, presumably, in the match that they've already taped, Kenta beats Moxley, right? So they get the U.S. title back in Japan.
That would be the safe presumption. The less interesting option, I think, at this point. Because Moxley winning after all this buildup would be very funny.
It would be funny. But if we assume that Mox loses, do we think that Tony has negotiated for a New Japan wrestler to lose to an AEW wrestler?
It would make sense. Would compute. Like, hey, we're going to have Archer pin Kenta this week.
Right. Or even, you know, if there's going to do a singles match out of this. I mean, you could build to a Kenny Omega Kenta match. By the way, if you wanted to.
Hey, why not?
Why not? I couldn't agree more.
The door is open now, Aaron. You could pretty much propose anything. I mean, we could.
That's true.
You could see what Nakanishi is doing at the tea farm. Maybe he wants to come over to the States again. I mean,
I would love to have Kurosawa. A monster morning.
I would like Izuka, personally, just so we can hear his theme song playing in Daily Place. That does. It is interesting they did sanction it now. Because lights out, they could just get away with not really beating anybody. Like, hey, no, mm-hmm. nobody has to lose here because it's a lights out match. It doesn't really count or whatever.
Well, I mean, you know, no DQ here, so I guess they can get away. Maybe Kenta is going to take the fall, but they get away from that somehow by, you know, he gets knocked out with something or what.
Are we live next week?
I don't know.
Do we know? Okay.
I believe we are taped. The next tickets I've seen on sale are on the 17th.
Good to know.
The other match that's already booked for next week, Chris Jericho and MJF versus The Acclaimed. I feel like they're really trying hard with this Acclaimed team.
I think The Acclaimed is good. That's why.
I'm not saying whether they're good or bad. I'm just saying I feel like AEW is really invested in The Acclaimed.
I think Platinum Max Caster, future superstar. They got to get him that Tanahashi match. Didn't have great punchlines on this. on this most recent episode, but he certainly has the capacity for star-making punchlines.
Big news. I got breaking news here for the people who will hear this in 2 days.
Breaking news.
WWE has come to the terms on the release of Steve Cutler, folks.
Steve Cutler. Steve Cutler. Is that Brandon Cutler? Of the yes. Cutler brothers?
Brandon Cutler's brother.
WWE?
One of the forgotten sons, my friend.
Not the problematic one, or not as problematic as the problematic one.
Yeah, well, the other guy was outspokenly problematic. Yeah, I actually thought for a brief second there you were going to announce that Vince died.
No, I would have done that much differently.
When I heard Steven, I thought you were going to say Steven Corino. I was like, okay, that's weird. But
that'd be fun. They bring Steve Corino in just to do like a random bloodbath match on Dynamite.
Just to do that commentary, cool. Just talking about super kicks that time.
Well, he's out. He's coming to an Impact Zone near you.
Really thought that was going to be more exciting news.
Yeah, he's going to be a king of the Coliseum in MLW. Court's going to make a deal.
I thought the way I did it, made it clear that it was not going to be exciting. But
sorry. How do y'all feel about that? MLW has much better distribution than New Japan Pro Wrestling in the United States.
I think it's kind of fine because you can get away with saying Roku is an upstart and it's a big brand. They're trying to build something. So it's, having New Japan there is like, oh, we think New Japan's important to getting an audience to the Roku channel. I think that kind of makes it fine from New Japan's perspective.
Aaron,
feelings? They just acquired the highly contested Quibi library. So it's like, oh,
they did.
Roku is getting after it right now.
I think our buddy, Rich Kreich, had the correct take, which is that it's fine, but they shouldn't have hyped it up. Like, it's not a thing to hype
at all. At all. Like, they should have been like, hey, we're now on Roku.
Right. But it's a fine thing. I mean, it's kind of a...
I don't think anybody thought that it was going to be, on what's even a channel.
I don't know.
BN Sports.
Yeah, that would... I think hyping up BN Sports... Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody really got unrealistic expectations from the hype. So I think it's probably better to build that you have positive news than bury it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, their U.S. outreach has had diminishing returns. So I don't know. But I mean, it's better than not having anything, right? I would assume so.
Yeah, I mean, the Rogue Channel, very easy to get and access, so.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I think that's everything that we have to talk about, unless you all have anything else.
Well, were we going to discuss what was going to
happen? Oh, you're right, Nate, I'm sorry. We're going to be changing. We're going to make a big change in how this show... I'm going to hype this up. No, what we should do, Nate, is say, next week on the show, we're going to make a big announcement. And then we do it. What do you think?
But it will already happen by the time people hear it.
Yes.
So we will be announcing something that has already occurred.
Okay,
it's
fine.
The AEW way. It's AEW way. We should exactly do it this way because this is exactly how they build up expectations.
Yeah, so here's the announcement, folks. Starting next week with episode 111 of Everything Elite, we are going to be recording immediately after AEW Dynamite on Wednesday nights. Hopefully this will get the show into your feed much more quickly and, much sooner after the show happened, after Dynamite happened, than we've been able to get it to you recently by recording. We usually record on Thursday night, so we're going to be doing it about 24 hours earlier. So that's going forward.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll also get, vaguely sleep-deprived Aaron, so it'll be a loopier, weirder show in general.
Oh, it'll definitely be a weirder show. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Let's just get weird with it.
Okay, we're going to do it.
That's the only comment I have about this. So that should probably make it that hopefully that Thursday morning you should get the show, so it'll be more timely. And yeah, I got nothing else.
Yes, ready to get those out to you as soon as possible. So that's coming up. All right, well, make sure you follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm Aaron Like the Car, Nate's at Epitasis, Mike's at Uji Heya. Subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And make sure you head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe today. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.